Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Collick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 23 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in. This week, I'm going to talk about our biological self-defense system. But before I go on, it's time to ask you, what do you think? Are you finding this podcast helpful, interesting, annoying? Is there anything that you wish I would talk about but haven't yet? I'd love to get some listener feedback. So on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on, please give us a rating and leave your comments. Comments automatically get forwarded to me, so I won't miss any. And I can respond or incorporate your suggestions into the show. I'd love to hear what you think. So please rate, comment, let me know. Back to our biological self-defense systems. What are they? Where are they? And how do we know we're using them? So our biological self-defense system is on all the time. That's the first thing to understand, I think, about self-defense. And it's one of the first things that I think gets overlooked. We tend to think that self-defense is only for really big, scary situations and not for just the mere act of keeping us alive. So our bodies were born with self-defense systems, not only in our immune systems, which is one that we already know about, but in the way that we respond to things in our environment. So for example, smell. Smell is a really great self-defense tool. Smell itself is neither good nor bad. It's actually neutral. It's how we interpret it according to our biological makeup. So for example, if I have a piece of rotten meat, to me, that's going to smell bad. That's a signal to me from my biological self-defense system that I should not eat it. A crow, on the other hand, might smell that piece of meat and think, oh, fantastic. What a jackpot I've hit, and tear into the rancid meat or whatever crows do. I don't really know. But nonetheless, we can override our self-defense system from time to time. So maybe the meat doesn't smell so bad. And I think, well, if I cook it all the way through, it'll be okay. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. And this is where our next level of self-defense comes in. So if I cook that rancid meat and I eat it and I get a stomach ache, that's my body self-defense system trying to get rid of something that is toxic to it. If I don't just have a stomach ache, but I violently vomit, that means that whatever I've eaten is actually posing an immediate threat to my health. But notice how these things kind of go in stages. There's smell, a warning sign. There's a stomach ache or a bad taste, a second level of warning sign. And then there's a forceful ejection, regardless of where it comes out. That's your third level of warning sign. And self-defense outside of our physical bodies kind of works the same way. When you tell someone, stop, please don't do that, maybe you say it again louder, and then you resort to physical self-defense. It always kind of escalates exactly the same. But let's go back to our biological self-defense systems. So illness, vomiting, a visceral reaction to something that is not going to be good for us to digest. Granted, there are certain things that we don't know. You can eat a mushroom or a berry that could be poisonous. Maybe it tastes really great. Maybe you don't have an immediate reaction to it. But let's remember that these are also living things. And these living things also have self-defense systems. So, for example, a parasite has a self-defense system. Snake has a self-defense system, and flora also has self-defense systems in the sense of bark on trees or things that are poisonous or root networks underground. So I'm not encouraging you to go through the world and look at everything from this, you know, oh my God, it's all a self-defense system perspective in a way that makes you paranoid. But at the same time, I am encouraging you to consider the fact that everything that's here on this earth, including you, including me, is here to survive. And we all have mechanisms to do that. We know that sleep as a self-defense system is there partly to repair our bodies from whatever damage we've done during the day. And I don't mean necessarily big damage. It can be small damage, like inhaling fumes or or exposed to the sun's rays or whatever it is, right? But of course, if you catch a bacteria or a virus in some way, then the body uses that sleeping period to help repair and fight it off. But did you know that the other thing that happens when you're asleep is a systems check? Your body is running a full self-defense systems check while you're sleeping, again and again and again, sharpening those really deep, fundamental, primal survival skills. That is the coolest thing ever. I stumbled across that information. I don't remember why or what research hole I was falling into, but I was curious about sleep and I was curious about vulnerability and self-defense. And this is what I found. I will put the links to those studies in the show notes as soon as I find them. Our intuition is also part of our self-defense system. So intuition isn't magic. It's not something that comes out of somewhere or nowhere, rather. I just had a feeling. That feeling is actual data. So we have neuroreceptors in our analytical brain, the brain in our heads, but we also have neuroreceptors in our gut. So when you have a gut feeling, that's what that is. What that means is we take in information all the time and from all of our senses. Not all of that information stays in the analytical brain. Some of it bypasses the analytical brain and goes straight to the neuroreceptors in our gut. From there, those neuroreceptors tell our body what to do. Run, defend, freeze, laugh, scream, whatever it is, right? And send signals back up to the brain that gives us these motor movements. Clearly, I'm not a biologist because I'm not using the right terminology, but I think you understand what I mean. So intuition is actually data. It's data that you've picked up on a subconscious level that your body has determined for whatever reason not to let it dwell in the analytical brain and go straight to the neuroreceptors in the gut. Maybe it's because that data isn't really that important. What I mean by that is if you have ever been sitting in a cafe and you feel that someone behind you is staring at you and maybe you turn and look and they are, like their eyes cut away and you're like, oh, I know you were looking at me. Most likely they are not plotting your murder. Most likely they are admiring whatever it is you're wearing, or they're admiring you, or there's some reason that they're fixated on you that isn't necessarily harmful and sometimes not even creepy. Sometimes it's really just they like what you're wearing and they're wondering if it would look good on them. We pick up that intention, but we may also be triangulating that information. So if someone is staring hard at your back, right, in a cafe, you may, on a subconscious level, pick up the weird look that the server gives to the person behind you that bounces off to the person to your left, who's also looking at the person behind you and wondering, why is this guy or woman staring at this other person, meaning you? So again, intuition is just data. That's all it is. That data is really important for you to listen to, but it's just data and it's part of your self-defense system. Fight, flight, freeze, or fawn are also parts of our self-defense system. Those neuroreceptors that send information back to our brain that says, run, that's a pretty obvious one. Defend is another really obvious one. Freeze isn't always so obvious, but freezing is a legitimate self-defense response. Freezing keeps not only certain animals alive, but it also keeps humans alive. There have been lots and lots and lots of even recent examples of people who play dead in mass shooting events, at war, wherever it is that they have the misfortune to be, where playing dead has actually gotten them out of that situation. Freezing is legitimate. And that even means allowing someone to touch you. You would never do that unless that's the only way to survive that situation. So if that's ever happened to you, please do not beat yourself up. Remember that your subconscious brain is taking a measurement of a situation that you might not be aware of, and all it's trying to do is keep you alive. Fawning is the act of kind of agreeing or going along with everything. Oh, yes, absolutely. This is a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate it. Oh, sure, we can go here or there. I'll give you a cup of coffee. When it seems like people are being too nice, women are often accused of being too nice, but women actually have fawning socialized into us, partly because our goal of mitigating emotions around us and keeping calm is to keep ourselves safe. We never know if somebody's going to explode into violence, but it's happened so frequently over the course of history that it's safer for us to bet on the side that they probably will. We also never know if that violence is going to explode into murder, which also happens. And we also never know if we're dealing with someone who has such a sense of entitlement that they feel that they can take their anger or their frustration out on women or simply just punish us for existing, which does happen. Whether you are feminist or not, that does happen. And it's been documented all over the place. So all of these things, if someone accuses you of being too nice or you're worried about yourself of being too nice, ask yourself the situations that you're being too nice in and why. Are you actually protecting yourself from something? And if you are, what is it? Is there another way to handle that? That's where we start learning a different kind of physical self-defense, where self-defense classes are really useful. But first, we want to know where we're defending ourselves or where we feel we need to defend ourselves. Shame is also a self-defense mechanism, believe it or not. So shame is something that we use collectively in communities. One of our strongest forms of self-defense as humans is community and networking. You've got a much better chance of survival being connected to a bunch of people than you do completely on your own. That's just in general. Shame is a way to make sure that everyone upholds the social contract for whatever that community is. So sometimes we need to shame people outside of ourselves. But shame also works on ourselves in reminding us who we are not. And that's, again, another important thing to keep in mind about shame because it's such an awful feeling. And we will often do whatever we possibly can to not have to feel that way. That tends to manifest in not taking responsibility or accountability or facing consequences for our actions because we don't want to face the shame. But when we remember that shame as a feeling is really a corrective tool that's there to help us say, hey, you're not actually like this. This isn't really who you are. That's why you feel bad right now. Go back to being the person that you feel confident being so that you can continue to contribute and function in this community that you're networked into. The only truly, truly organic self-defense position or mechanism that we have is the one that we adopted before we were even born, which is the fetal position. The fetal position is a great position and we use it through our entire lives. So not only while we are still developing in the womb, but also as adults, whenever we feel sick or scared or sad, the fetal position is something that we have a tendency to curl up into on a fairly regular basis throughout our lives. But one of the things I like to think about when I'm thinking about the fetal position as a self-defense position is the fist. I'm going to take the other hand. It's very similar, right? When the soft part of the body of the hand, of course, is being protected when you curl your hand up into a fist. And that's the same function of the fetal position. The fetal position is protecting all the soft internal organs by curling around them and making sure that they're safe, right? We're not covered with a hard shell, but our back, when all the muscles are completely tensed, can act like armor. And that's true for any of the big muscles in our bodies. It's not to say that they are armor and that you are impenetrable when you have all of your muscles tensed, but they are there for your protection as well. When our muscles are that tense, sometimes, for example, when we need to start moving right away, if you're tensed up and frozen and then you need to start running, we might start shaking. We often think that shaking when we're feeling frightened is a really negative thing, but shaking is actually there to loosen up your muscles and your joints so that you can move quickly. So shaking is also a biological self-defense tool. We are wonderfully complex beings that have a lot of innate self-defense tools already built inside of us or built into us, I would say. discovering what those are and how they work for you is one of the greatest joys that I get in teaching self-defense and in martial arts, because the two can sometimes go hand in hand in that respect. I recommend that you get to know your body's self-defense system as one of the very foundational ways of just gaining confidence in how powerful you actually are. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts professional and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website as well at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/selfdefensetrainer, all one word. This podcast is produced by Zynga Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission of the artists.